This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America. As you may have noticed, the U.S. equity markets, among other markets in the world, have done quite well in the first portion of 2021, with average gains in the mid-teens for the major averages, some doing even better, and internal rates of return on a variety of different investment classes have also been quite strong, including those of private equity. So what's the environment like for non-public markets at the moment, and how much will developments in the public markets, like the emergence of SPACs and other investment vehicles, affect the buyout world? Joining me now to talk about that is Ethan Vogelhut. He is head of Buyout Investments America for Schroders Capital. Ethan, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you, Ron.
Let me just get you to recap, if you would. I mean, where we are. We've got the Dow up almost 13%, the S&P up 14%, NASDAQ up sharply, the Russell 2000 up 17% year to date. We've had a stellar year in the public equity markets in 6 months. What do you make of the overall environment that you're seeing when it comes to the investment world?
Yeah, it has been a really broad-based strength, as you mentioned, in the public equities markets, and the private markets have really held up well as well, and had very strong performance. So we saw, after a pretty strong pause in the first half of 2020 due to the pandemic, a real ramp in terms of performance as well as acquisition activity and exit activity as companies really rebounded and responded well, and very strong performance across private equity, and particularly in the U.S. buyout space.
Yes, let's talk a little bit more about U.S. buyout. So obviously, exit strategies, distribution activity are all very important. Can you frame those for us so we understand where we are at the moment?
Sure. We are seeing a very strong exit environment right now. And again, that picked up in the second half of 2020 as I think investors and private equity firms started to get their hands around the implications of the pandemic and started looking in the beginning for companies that were very resilient during the pandemic and robust and held up well. And so we saw a fair amount of activity in technology and software focused companies, particular segments within healthcare and really mission critical services and products. That's really where investors started to focus. And so, if you were invested in a company that was in one of those spaces, we saw very, very elevated multiples for companies that were well positioned like that. And what we also have seen is there is a very large amount of dry powder in the market, in the buyout space, looking for deals. And a lot of that pent up demand really came to fruition in the second half of 2020 and has continued into 2021. So, today we see, a really great time to be selling, to sell into that dry powder that needs to get put to work. And particularly at the large end of the market, we see a lot of that capital looking for great businesses to invest in. And in many cases, large buyout funds are even outcompeting strategics for those businesses.
You mentioned multiples. And so, from a buyer's perspective, when you look at public markets, the forward price earnings ratio, for instance, on the S&P 500 is 21, which is historically quite high.
Sorry to jump in. Forward PE stands for forward price to earnings. It's a version of the ratio of price to earnings that uses forecasted earnings for the PE calculation. It can be less reliable than current or historical earnings data, but there are still benefits to it. And just another note that the historical PE for the S&P 500 has been around about 17 times earnings. Anyway, back to Ron.
And people generally have spoken about valuations in the U.S. as being relatively high. And again, it's relative because interest rates and the risk-free rate of return is so low. When you're looking at the small and medium space, is the same thing true there, that companies are richly valued at the moment and you're just hoping they're going to get richer?
Yeah, there is definitely a bifurcation in the market. So the larger companies definitely are trading for much more elevated multiples. So, you know, typically 12 times enterprise value to EBITDA plus.
Sorry to jump in again. EV stands for enterprise value. It's a measure of a company's total value and is often used as a comprehensive alternative to equity market capitalization. EBITDA stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation and amortization, and it's a metric used to evaluate a company's operating performance. The enterprise value to EBITDA ratio is calculated by dividing the enterprise value by EBITDA, and values below 10 are seen as healthy. Anyway, back to Ethan.
And at the small end of the market, there has been some creep in valuations, but it's not as pronounced from what we've seen. Typically, companies are trading in that 7 to 9 times EV to EBITDA. So we see, you know, sort of an implied bargain in these small and mid-sized businesses relative to, you know, to the larger peers. But there is some, you know, some elevation, and some of that is by sector. There are definitely different industries that just trade for higher multiples because of the financial characteristics of the business model and the growth potential. But on average, you know, the small end, it remains a pretty inefficient market. There's a lot of companies out there to choose from, and it tends to be less intermediated than the larger end of the market. But it is getting more competitive, but we still see great opportunities in that space at the lower end.
So from a practical perspective, and this, you know, revolves around the philosophy of different buyout firms, you know, some companies, particularly in a large buyout space, consolidate specific industries, take costs out, make them more efficient, and then kick them back out to the public. Merchant banking, you're buying management teams with the expectation that the company will grow larger. From your perspective, when you're buying in the small to mid-size, are you buying companies, or are you buying managements, or are you buying both?
Yeah, you're typically buying companies that are, you know, that have a really strong product or service that, you know, may not be as optimized as they could be. And in many ways, you're professionalizing those businesses. You are, you know, bringing in additional resources to help manage the companies. Sometimes you're working as a, you know, almost an outsourced M&A function for the business that might not have that capabilities to help it grow and become a, you know, a bigger business. So you're doing a lot of the same things just on a smaller scale. And it's, you know, in our view, you know, you can create a bigger business from something smaller just by kind of the laws of small numbers. But you're really providing resources to these smaller businesses that they might not have on their own. And many of them, you know, they tend to be family-owned, founder-owned companies, or, you know, smaller divisions within a larger corporate that are ripe for these types of transformation and growth with the right help.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Now, the right help also is helped by having the right economic backdrop. And we've seen a great improvement, obviously, in the U.S. economy on the consumer side. The labor markets have been good, but not as vibrant as some have expected. We've seen numerous early retirements as the result of the pandemic, people rethinking their lives and what they want to do with them. We've seen some people reluctant to return to jobs that they had previously and are either seeking better financial arrangements or maybe more psychic gratification. How is that affecting the buyout market overall?
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting dynamic. It, you know, before the pandemic, we saw a very strong employment picture. There were a lot of jobs, and you know, private equity backed companies were facing, you know, a difficulty in retaining their workers because employees would change jobs. They'd go to, you know, to other opportunities that could pay more, and you know, that led to rising costs in you know, private equity and other companies that had you know, this type of workforce. And so that you saw a lot of turnover, and you know, if you were in a business that was more commoditized and couldn't pass along some of those rising costs, you know, you could get squeezed. And we did see that happen in certain businesses that had that dynamic. Then the pandemic hit, and you know, I think the expectation was that there would be more slack in the labor market, but that actually, as you mentioned, it just, you know, hasn't really happened because you've had people leaving the labor force. I think people's you know, so there could be some connection to the benefits that they're getting to stay home versus work, and so you still have a real shortage of qualified workers in many different jobs. And so you know, private equity, I think, is responding in different ways. You have to be able to entice employees to, you know, to work for you, and then retain them and train them and treat them as assets. And I think a lot of private equity backed companies are doing that in order to remain competitive. I think they're also targeting companies that have that pricing power. So if you are dependent on a large workforce, you can you know, really improve the work environment and you know, wages and benefits for them, but you will have to be able to pass those costs along. And some firms are you know, avoiding very people intensive businesses and focusing more on technology, software, and more maybe higher skilled service type of businesses to, you know, just try to sidestep what's become a, you know, a meaningful issue.
Let me ask you, I guess it's kind of a philosophical question, and maybe this works for you, maybe it doesn't. But, you know, we've seen 40 years where capital has been favored over labor, maybe even a little longer than that now. And now it seems like the balance is shifting back towards labor. So how critical is it for private equity purchasers of companies to really get involved in that program of training, retraining, and in many ways reorienting the environment so that there is a stickiness to the connection now, maybe much as there was in prior decades, between the employee and the employer?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the focus on, you know, just the overall employee dynamic and making yourself a company that employees want to work for and that's attractive to, you know, to you know, workers is very important. I think private equity realizes that and is acting on it. And, you know, some may be better than others, but I do think it's definitely an important focus that, you know, becomes part of the value creation tool. If you have, you know, very happy, satisfied employees, you're generally providing better services to your customers. And, you know, if you're not able to retain employees, it becomes a real cost because you're constantly having to retrain and go out and hire new ones. It's much better to have a really strong and you know, satisfied employee base. And I think that's, you know, commonly accepted, despite maybe the reputation within private equity. It's it's an important part of every company.
Let me ask some more of an operational question when it comes to what you do, which is the importance of the buy and buying at the right price amid what is increasingly very fierce competition in the buyout space. How do you maintain the discipline, and what's the approach to purchasing and then developing an exit strategy in your world?
Yeah, I think sourcing is really important, and being able to, you know, have a broad network to go out and find businesses that are attractive and be able to be very selective is really important. So many firms have business development and, you know, teams that go out and actually are, you know, that is their real function, is to go out and find as many companies as possible, whether that's through intermediaries, brokers, investment banks, or direct outreach to companies themselves. You know, I think having a thesis in many cases, knowing sectors that you like and think will have good tailwinds behind them, you know, makes you a more knowledgeable and attractive buyer to the seller. You know, generally, sellers want to be selling their business to someone who they think will help it thrive as they either continue on or sell off the business. So I think specialization is also important, whether it's a sector specialization or some type of functional expertise that you bring to the company that really differentiates you on the buy. So it's not just about price, and you can be the buyer of choice at maybe a better valuation than you see typically in a specific industry. So it's really about what you can bring to the company, and your your capability in, you know, that particular business model, that becomes more and more important. And it just, it does get more competitive every day, and buyers have to be really bringing something interesting to the table versus their you know, competitors, which, you know, could be viewed as just capital. And those resources are, you know, bringing those to bear and executing on that strategy is what creates really strong exit value. If you really improve the business and grow it, and you can show a path for the next buyer on how there's continued growth, that's really the recipe for generating great returns in private equity and kind of pulling all the levers of return generation, which are, you know, buying well, transforming, and then selling for that better multiple.
So final question around that. So we've seen in the last, I would say, 18 months or so, the reemergence of special purpose acquisition companies, or SPACs, which have effectively been buyers of private company, and then they use additional capital known as PIPEs to bring where private companies public or smaller companies public, and do so in a way that's more advantageous to a variety of players in that industry. What kind of competition does that represent to the private equity and to the buyout world? Or is it something that's just so niche, even though a lot of money obviously has changed hands in the last, just this year, but does it affect the overall arc of what you do?
Yeah, I think the jury's still out there. There is a lot of capital that's been raised to, you know, to in many ways do what you know private equity does, and it's, you know, additional dry powder that's in the market that, you know, could create competition on the buy for different companies. You know, our focus on the small and mid end, you know, it tends to be more of a potential exit option. That, you know, if you have a business that's well positioned and growing, you know, you could potentially sell, you know, to a SPAC, but not as much competition on the buy at this end of the market. I think it does, you know, start to impact maybe at the larger end of the market as some of the ticket sizes for those SPACs are larger. And yeah, I think it creates some increased competition for deals, but yeah, you know, in terms of how credible a competitor it is, I think we still are waiting to see, because there's a lot of money that still it's been raised but hasn't yet been put to work. And so we're kind of waiting to see how that develops. So it's an additional layer of competition, but I think it affects different parts of the market in different ways.
All right. Ethan, thanks very much for your time. Appreciate you joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Ron.
Sure thing. Ethan Vogelhut, Head of Buyout Investments America for Schroders Capital. That does it for this edition of the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the long holiday weekend, and we'll be back with you in a couple weeks.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.